Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. We have another great show tonight dealing with metaphysics and spirituality. I thought tonight would be an interesting night to start a series, another one of those series. I'm going to call this part one, because we're beginning, dealing with the life of souls. Now, you might think, are we going to talk about our souls? Well, eventually. Maybe not tonight, because we've got to start at the beginning, and the beginning is actually kind of different than what most people, I think, may believe is the life of souls. And also, it has its own, we'll say, considerable different kind of life than the life of the human soul. But we will get to all of that. If you are interested in participating by calling in, you can do so by calling 877-876-5227 if you're in the U.S., 888-815-9756 if you're in Canada. And I would love to hear from you, so just feel free to pick up the phone and give us a call. And the other thing that's interesting about this is that during tonight's show, I think that there will be some questions people might have, because although I'm going to cover the subject fairly thoroughly, of course, I can't go to the very beginning of where and how souls come into existence, because to do so would be a very long time. So I'm going to kind of short-circuit the beginning, you might say, by starting from a generalization rather than what I would consider to be, in a true teaching way, what is the very beginning of the whole process? Because you really have to go to the beginning of the universe if you're going to explain it. But I won't do that tonight. I'll save you that. But let's begin from a place called the spiritual dimension, or plane, some people may call it that. And in this spiritual dimension, which is a much more complicated dimension, has a lot more dimensionality to it than the one we exist on. And at the very top of this dimension, we'll say the most advanced part of this dimension, where it comes together in a completeness, the speed of thought and light, both, is light times itself. It's a huge number, a very big number. So things are, we'll say, accelerated, and time is affected by this factor as well. Not going to get too much into the physics of this, but if you could imagine that going from one place to another at the speed of light is considered to be very fast, you could imagine if you multiplied that speed times itself, how fast that would be. And that's the dimension that the spirit, which creates itself into a soul, comes from. And you might say, well, okay, but where did that spirit come from? And you know, and that's why I'm not going to go back any further. Yes, I can explain it, but no, I'm not going to. Because that would be several more shows going back further and further and further. But we'll start with this place called the spiritual plane. Now, there are other names for it. I know some people have different names they call it. I like the word spiritual because we all can understand that. And that's a nice English word. In other words, like atmic and things, there's these words that most people say, well, huh? What did he say? And we'll just stick with the spiritual. Now, the reason it's called the spiritual plane, and this is really fascinating, is that it is composed much more of spirit than it is of energy. Really, at the very peak of this dimension, there's five times as much spirit as there is energy. And that makes a difference. When you have that much spirit, there is a whole bunch of thought going on, but not as much sense in bodies and movement and activity. Because all of the senses and bodies and activities in the universe are created through energy. In our universe. And without there being much energy, there's not that much going on in terms of those issues that I just said. Now, spirit would like to create more of its creator because it is much closer to being its own creator than spirit that exists in lower dimensions of time and space, like the spirit that's in us right here, right now. That spirit is almost totally dominated by energy and controlled by it, to the point where most people don't recognize spirit very well, but they can recognize all kinds of energy and forms. So when we look at the spiritual plane, it's kind of the reverse, where spirit can recognize all kinds of things about other spirit, but has a tremendous deficit about having an an awareness and an understanding of energies, particularly the energies that exist below the spiritual plane, below the point where spirit is so abundant and thought is so strong, and so strong like it is in its own creator. So this spirit says, hey, you know what? I'd really like to be doing more in co-creating with my creator a balance between spirit and form, rather than there being just so much of me and so little of the form or energy that the creator wants to be part of the whole picture in growing more of life, which is how it, the creator itself, grows. So this system is dependent upon there being some junction where spirit and form can come together and be pretty much equal. And this is a critical junction. It isn't just an arbitrary one. Because when the two are equal, from that place of beingness, of equality, between the thought part of our universe, which is spirit, spirit is thought, but it's thought along the lines of our creator, and the energy part, which is the form part and the activity part of our universe. When those two come together and they are nearly or are balanced, in other words, there's an equality between them, and I'll explain how that equality exists in a little bit more detail in a minute, but for right now, that when there is an equality, these two become co-creators together, and they do so in ways that allows the creator, God, to grow much more in the lower dimensions of time and space that are so difficult for God to be represented within life, which is its own growth. You can say, well, why does God concern itself with that? Why not just settle for the spiritual plane itself and have lots of spirit running around with a little bit of energy and it do such a terrific job in creating its own creator there? Why do we have to worry about the lower dimensions of time and space where it gets more and more difficult to create the creator? Well, what we call difficulty, the creator calls opportunity. And what we call, detriment, the creator calls spiritual sacrifice. So that's the difference, is a perspective one. Our perspective is from the basement looking up and saying, well, things are so bad down here. Do you really want to make more of the creator here? Because this is a horrible place to be, and I don't know if I can do any of that. See, that's us, and that's our perspective. But from spirit's perspective, it sees it totally differently. It says, well, all I need to do is to create a being that has a pretty close proximity of equality between the thought part, who I am, spirit, and the energy part, which is kind of, now I'm going to kind of define it now, in deficit of thought, but seeking to gain thought. And there's two kinds of energy. There's the kind that just wants to join more with itself and create something we call gravity, but it would call it getting together with its own kind. And that's the kind of energy that really needs a lot of development, you might say. And then there's another kind of energy that actually has a more inclusive kind of thinking within itself. That's called divonic energy, for those of you who need to know. And that kind of energy is more advanced. And our universe has some of both in it right from the get-go. But the energy that you know, is the kind that wants to just gravitate together and hang out with its own kind. That's a separative type of energy. Dominance, as the dimensionality of the universe becomes less and less. In other words, you move to lower dimensions of time and space, and you have higher and higher levels of gravity, and more energy that just really wants to be around its own kind, and doesn't give a hoot about anything else. So it really is pretty much, we'll say, separative. And that's called elemental energy, not to be confused with other kinds of elemental words that would describe other things. Okay, so we have this very interesting interplay going on between spirit and a couple of different kinds of energies that both respond to spirit's thought, provided that thought is greater than the collective thought of the energy itself. And the amazing thing about this is in the dimension we live in, right here, right now, the physical one, the basement, I call it, in the basement, energy dominates. Our spirit, the spirit that's in our bodies right at this moment, not the spirit that's in our minds and the one that exists in a different dimension, but the spirit that keeps our physical bodies together and inhabits it to some extent, that spirit is actually weaker in thought than most of the collective energy around us, because there is so much of that collective energy. It really is the dominant aspect. And unfortunately, that energy draws us into illusion so that our senses don't work very well, because it senses mostly other energy rather than spirit, because it's kind of, that's the way it is. And we just don't get it that we're living in a universe that is the inside of God, and we're here to create more of that. And we don't get that because our senses tell us something different. Our senses tell us, well, there is no spirit, it's just a bunch of energy. And for some reason, this energy is doing strange things, but we can't explain what it is. Okay, back to my story. And you might say, whoa, this is one heck of a story. I thought it was going to be a simple thing to explain where and what souls are and what the life of souls are. You ain't even got there yet. No, I haven't. Of course not. That's right. This is part one. What do you want me to say? If it was all that easy, I could send it to you on a postage stamp, and that would be the end of it, right? It's unfortunately not the case. The universe is a little more complicated than that, but it's interesting. It's a lot of interesting, actually. Okay, so spirit in the spiritual plane, the dimension of time and space, sometimes called the third from the top, right? Because there's two dimensions even higher than the spiritual dimension. But it's a very high place. It's a very, very high place. Some people call it nirvana, by the way. That's a nirvanic dimension or the atmic. But those names, again, I like spiritual because it really explains what it does. Okay, the spirit in that dimension of time and space would like very much to create a being with itself, lowered in dimensionality, to a point where its thought and the thought of the energy that is around it is about equal. And from that position, it can create a heck of a lot more of its creator, because it has a good balance of perspective between senses and form and energy and spirit. It's not overwhelmed by too much thought coming from just spirit, and it's not overwhelmed by senses that are overwhelmed by energies and only sensing other energies and missing the thought of God. It's a nice balance. And where does that balance take place? In a place called the monastic dimension. And it's actually the higher, because the monastic is kind of split right now, the higher part of the monastic dimension. And on the higher part of monastic dimension, there is a section where souls are created from spirit joining with the form that exists in these very specific areas. I'm going to tell you where they are. And when it joins with the energy, it becomes balanced. And in that balanced state, it is a great creator anywhere from that point down lower to create more of God. But there's a good reason why it's there, because it's a perfect place to do it, and there's a good reason why it doesn't start there, doesn't start in higher dimensions of time and space, because then it would be overwhelmed by spiritual thinking, but not have enough sense of form in the lower dimensions of time and space. And actually, The whole system is designed so that the spirit can get as low as possible and maintain this balance. The lower it can get and still maintain the balance, the better it can sense the lower dimensions of time and space, pick up information from other life forms that it helps to create below itself, and to, we'll say, be a co-creator with its creator as much as possible in the lower dimensions below the higher monastic. So that's its purpose. That is why it chooses to go to these lengths and to these places of, we'll say, the lowest it can go, actually, and still maintain itself in a balance with the energy that is present. Now, you might say, okay, give us the names of those places. Okay, I will. The lowest that spirit can go and create the lowest, it's not even life yet, it's called pre-life, I'll explain what that means, is the third sub-plane of the mental plane or monastic plane. And there's even a specific place on that third sub-plane that's called the fourth sub-sub-plane. Oh, my God. Yeah, sub-sub-plane and higher. That's where it can hang out. If it goes any lower than the fourth sub-sub-plane of the third sub-plane, it will not be able to develop itself into a soul, which is a balance between its critical thinking as God thinks and using the senses of form that can be made from the form of that sub-sub-plane itself. So that's the lowest it can go. Any lower, and boom, it's out of luck, and it will fall apart. It will not be able to maintain a balance between its awareness, which comes from its senses and form, and its consciousness, which comes from the way that it thinks. The two will separate, and you won't have a soul anymore. So spirit gets to this dimension, and the very first souls that are made by spirit joining with the energy that it finds from the fourth sub-sub-plane up, but not going past or any higher than the third. All right, the third mental subplane. Don't get confused with subplanes and sub-subplanes. Think of the sub-subplane as 1/7 of a subplane, okay? And a subplane is 1/7 of a whole plane. So they actually have 49, you can see how that figure comes in there, 49 of these sub-subplanes. Okay, so, and I know some of you are going to have trouble following that if you haven't read some of the books I've written and you haven't heard some of my other talks about this. It's okay, even if you don't remember all this, this is the concepts that count. The big concepts are more important than all this little nitty-gritty stuff. Okay, so we got these souls now, and they're the very first ones that are formed, and they pertain to a planet like Earth. Not all planets have these kinds of souls directly working on them. Depends on the circumstances and the time and development of the planet. But a lot do. And on Earth, for sure, we have them. And what do they do? Well, the soul is going to create, in this case, pre-life forms, not life forms, but we'll call pre-life forms of minerals and substances we call chemistry, chemicals, all the stuff that life is eventually made out of, but it isn't alive yet. So we call it the mineral kingdom itself. It's like a kingdom composed of everything that's mineral but not yet alive. Yeah, that would include rocks and those kinds of things. And it makes these things in this higher mental world, but they get manifested, they get incarnated, if you want to use that word, in the etheric physical world, the one that we inhabit right now. That's where they first are developed. And interestingly, they have much longer, we'll call it pre-lifespan, than anything a human being does. They could be around for billions of years, and they are developed based upon a plan that the spirit picks up on from the, we'll call it, higher mental spirit, collectively, of the planet, that is sent to them through beings that are even much higher called monads. That's going to confuse some of you, I know. And just think of it as like great beings that have a design for our planet and want to make sure the planet is going to do the very best it can to create life. So they have like a blueprint, but they don't have an independent and separate blueprint for everything that they do. They have a general blueprint, and from that they create some of the elements that become compounds and eventually develop into all kinds of different interesting chemistries. And so it's how a planet builds itself up and eventually will develop life on it. Now you might say, well, I thought our planets are the same. Don't they have the same chemistry? They go by most of the same laws of chemistry, but the basis of life may be considerably different. Even in this world right now, we're discovering some life that doesn't work quite in the same way that other life does. It may have RNA and DNA in it. Certainly I'll go along with most of it having that. But it has a lot of different ways that it uses chemistry. Let me give you an example. There's some life forms that can live close to life, close to energy sources that are like 700-800 degrees Fahrenheit. They themselves can get over 200 degrees Fahrenheit. And they literally have a cycle of energy. Now, these are bacteria, and then the bacteria feed some other kinds of life. The bacteria literally has an exchange of energy that deals with sulfur and iron and all kinds of weird things. And they are absorbing energy from these, they're called smokers, from underground, we'll call them vents, parts of volcanoes, that are shooting off all of this hot mineral-rich fluid, water included, at high, very high temperatures, because the water actually is way above boiling as we understand it, because it's under such high pressure. And amazingly, this life does not use the same kind of chemistry as life that we're familiar with. As a matter of fact, it uses such different chemistry that it was only discovered about 30 years ago. Before that, we didn't know it existed. And it doesn't use or need light. It doesn't need carbohydrates as we typically understand them to be. And it is an unusual kind of life form, basically. And so that's just one example. And it may be actually the foundation of life overall. All life may have come from that life rather than from what we typically think of life. So we're just reaching the beginning of understanding how complex life can be and how different it can be from one place to another. Now, that's on the same planet. Could you imagine you go to a different planet, what life could be like there? So there can be all kinds of different standards and ways that life exists. Even the concept that we use in this world of the double helix for most life, or at least a single in terms of RNA. But when we look at this issue, that doesn't have to be that way. It just happens to be that way on this world. There are other ways that life could reproduce itself and create what we would call a genome, etc. Something different could be done than that. Okay, so now, these souls, the original souls, the first ones that develop, are involved in developing minerals that eventually are going to become life forms. And they have to get complex enough and develop something called, at least as we're familiar with, a hydrocarbon basis of exchange of energy. Carbon really is a means of holding energy, and nitrogen is a way of releasing it. But without getting too involved with that, let's just say in this world, that's the way we do it. But there are other worlds that can do it differently. And that's the one that is this plan I was talking about. The general plan is to use hydrocarbons and to develop these hydrocarbons and to use that kind of life form. And also water plays a role in this, too, because hydro means water, you see. And so it's a big deal on our planet, but interestingly, it may not be in some others. And so the very first souls are involved in doing all of this mineral work. And some of it involves the very center of the Earth, because that's where the minerals are really coming from. there's some that do fall in from outer space from time to time, but that's not the dominant amount of material. Almost all of it, maybe 99.99% of it, is coming from inside the Earth. And that's moving around. And some minerals come to the surface at different times based upon this plan again. And some of the souls are involved with minerals inside the Earth and not on the outside at all. As a matter of fact, the very first minerals, the very first souls, excuse me, that control minerals are the souls that control the minerals inside the Earth, inside the mantle, and even all the way down to the very core of the Earth. They're more in the mantle, though, because there's a bigger mixture of different elements there. And amazingly, that is really where it all starts. Not what everybody might think of as being the surface. It takes a while for there to be a surface. The planet, for hundreds of millions of years, is at the beginning of its development, is, you know, too hot, and it's very, very plastic, you might say. And it's in a constant state of change. It just hasn't settled down, and there's virtually no atmosphere. Atmosphere is critical if you're dealing with the surface, but not important at all if you're dealing with the center. Or the middle, or the mantle even, which is not the middle, of course, of the Earth. Then these other conditions come into play. These conditions are called currents that move around inside. And sometimes they push lighter elements to the surface, and other times they push more heavy elements to the surface. And all kinds of different elements are moved up at different times. And this causes changes, causes a lot of changes. And it allows different kinds of pre-life and eventually life to be developed during different ages. Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Okay, so I will continue on with this because we're coming to the middle break here and tell you a lot more about these beginning souls, because the life of these souls is fascinating, even though it's rather foreign to us, because after all, we have a whole different way of living than these souls do. So we'll be back in, I give or take, about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we are talking about the life of souls, and starting with the souls that pertain to minerals. And let me continue on. Now, when a soul is a lower kingdom group soul, lower than human, it deals with vast amounts of, we'll call it pre-life and life all at the same time. There is no individual rock or individual piece of iron or any of the constituents of the mineral kingdom, plant, or even animal, that is separate from vast numbers of other of its kind. Because these souls are called group souls. Group being that they pertain to a general class. If it was an animal or plant, we would call it species, or a subspecies, or family, you know, that sort of thing. And so, you know, they pertain to this group, but in chemistry, we don't use those words. In minerals, we talk about it in terms of periodic tables, in certain types of compounds, and eventually inorganic and organic, and that sort of stuff. But those are human words to describe the groupings that we are identifying of this particular kingdom. The groupings come about from reasons maybe we are somewhat ignorant of. But we at least can recognize, like, well, this and that seem to fit together. And if we know the atomic structure, atomic weight, if we know how many electrons and how it makes, you know, ionic or covalent bonds with other chemicals, We have a system that we have developed that we think explains to us what's going on. It really doesn't, because what's going on is much more interesting and behind the scenes, because the spirit part of the group of souls has a whole plan. It's not just making a bunch of chemicals and throwing them together and seeing what's going to stick. It has a plan. And as a person studies more from the metaphysical side, more from the spiritual side of things, and moves some distance between that and the material side or the form side, they don't get as confused by energy, and they become more balanced themselves, more like their souls, and suddenly they can discover the plan of the souls and why the souls are doing what they're doing, and that it isn't just a helter-skelter, you know, chaotic mess. Because it seems pretty obvious to someone who does study this that that is not the case, that the things, there's a design. And this design was made a long, long time ago. Before there was even a planet, there was a design for it. Okay, so group souls that are the beginning group souls, the very first ones on a planet, are all pertaining to the kingdom we call minerals. You could say, well, what about the plants and the animal group souls? I'll get to them, and you'll see where they come from. But the beginning on a planet such as Earth, a physical planet, is all about mineral group souls. And there are hundreds of millions of years go by before there's anything other than mineral group souls. And they're doing their thing. They're creating the compounds. They're creating an atmosphere. They're creating the oceans. They're creating all kinds of things that will allow there to be life on the planet, because this is the pre-life stage. Now you might say, well, when do we get to the life stage? Well, the life stage begins with what we generally refer to as the plant kingdom. But before there's the plant kingdom, you got to kind of work your way into it, and you're going to have other things besides plants. Plants are actually fairly developed even in their own right. And before there's plants, there's got to be, we'll call it, a pre-kingdom or a kingdom between kingdoms. And there's what's between the mineral and the plant is kingdoms of little one-celled organisms, and for the most part, they're composed of some types, but not a whole lot, of bacteria and some types of algae. And these types of beginning life, which generally are one-celled, sometimes they collectively get together, though. Eventually, they do, anyway. And they just hang out together. They don't form like individual bodies like what we're familiar with, because that comes much later. But in the beginning, they do sometimes get together. And this then becomes the next kind of life that's going to develop, and the first kind. It's minuscule, it's usually microscopic, and it's tenacious, because it can live in a lot of different places. But it is also, at the same time, not very developed. It's kind of like the slime kind of principle. And the souls that develop this life are the most advanced souls that developed minerals. Because you see, what happened was, some of the souls got very good at making organic compounds. And advanced hydrocarbons, advanced proteins, and eventually they became capable of replicating themselves. At that point, we would usually call them a life form. And that came from the soul itself advancing itself in the mineral kingdom to the point where it made a change. It could make a life form that could be self-creating and make zillions and zillions of itself, but it can't necessarily do a lot more than that. So you could say, well, they hung around a lot and they made a lot of themselves. Well, that's good. I mean, you got to start somewhere. And so for the souls that were great at making a lot of different compounds that eventually got very good at making organic compounds, and eventually organic compounds that could replicate themselves, such as RNA and DNA, then we had new souls that took over and became focused on a certain selection of ways to replicate themselves, selections of ways of creating what we call new genomes. Now, these are simple. They had very, very simple number of chains and sequences, and nothing like the 20,000 plus that are in the human being, but this might add, they might have a few dozen, but enough to keep the life form so that it could be replicated within its own self and keep making more and more of itself. But for the most part, exchanging minerals and in some cases using sunlight as an energy source. And this is the amazing thing. We now have built up minerals that are selective in their use of energy, and rather than non-selective, as most pre-life is. And with its ability to make choice between what energy it can use and not use, and how it's going to use it, the life form now has something new within itself. We could call it the very basis of what consciousness is, which is the ability to choose to be, and the ability to choose to be more, at least of itself, if not more of other things. And this is what distinguishes life. And the souls that tend to create that kind of life come from the highest and best developed in consciousness of the pre-life souls or the mineral souls. So the mineral souls eventually become souls of bacteria and algae, which eventually start becoming other kinds of plants, okay, over time. Now, over billions of years this takes place. It doesn't happen overnight. And so the life of souls that we're creating pre-life in minerals have a very different kind of existence than when they develop themselves into the life, into a life of creating life forms, starting with the very lowest forms of, we'll call it microbes, and microbial life, which eventually becomes plants, and eventually some of the microbial life also develops into animals. So some bacteria, the beginning bacteria mostly develops into plants, but eventually much more of it later on develops into what we call primitive, the most primitive kinds of animal forms. So it's a very interesting process, whereas on the opposite side, the beginning forms of algae almost all become plants, and then when the later parts of their development become more advanced plants, and almost none of them become animals. So it's kind of an interesting, fascinating split, we'll say, that takes place gradually. And that's because we have souls that are specializing. Some of the souls move towards eventually staying and advancing into the plant kingdom, and some of those souls advance into the animal kingdom fairly rapidly, but then they stay for like a billion years just making, we'll call, the most primitive forms of animal life, whereas later on, some of the most advanced of the plant souls actually go on to develop more advanced forms of animal life, which is kind of strange, isn't it? That's how it works. And some of the animal life souls, the souls that created animal life, go on to create more advanced animals as well. So you have you'll see a pyramid kind of being developed, where everything is moving towards a higher and higher level, but it isn't all staying specifically only in one kingdom. There's some crossovers, and there's in between the two kingdoms, you have a lot of microbial things going on, because those are the parts of life that can't quite get all the way into the next kingdom. They sort of get in between, kind of have to be babied until they can move into the next kingdom. And it's a fascinating process. So souls are really developing themselves, and they have so many different routes they can take that it's hard to say it only goes linear, in a linear fashion, from here to there and there and there in a certain step, because each is creative in its own right and way. And some of the older books that have been written on this made it sound that's the way it was, but it isn't exactly like that. It's actually a lot more interesting and complicated, because they can, on their own, change themselves into being selective in new ways that may produce all kinds of different forms of life over time. And it allows what we call evolution to have many twists in it. Now you might say, well, what about that business of evolution? Isn't evolution supposed to be just based upon the environment and natural selection and all this other stuff? Well, one would think that that might be true, except that if you read the history of Earth and you understand it all, there would be so many places where Earth should have failed and life should not exist on Earth, yet it continues on, that if it wasn't all planned out, the odds are like a zillion to one almost, that there would be no life on Earth, or any planet for that matter, because these designs are meant to put stresses on life, meant to change life and then get it to adapt in certain ways, at very critical junctions. And they're so critical that if you're off by even, you know, a few tens of thousands of years, life might have ended altogether. And certainly by a million years, that would be true. And so it's too difficult to believe that, you know, unless you want to believe that there's only one planet in the entire universe that has life on it, and that's us, because the odds would be virtually to that tipping point, and maybe even against that, that there would ever be life, because there are so many critical elements that go to make up life. And, of course, in the series that we just covered, I went through some of that. So hopefully you can see how that connects with what we're talking about right now, that you have to have all of these conditions coming together that is going to make life work. And it's so complicated and so treacherous at some points that the only way it would work is if there's somebody planning it, or you would only have maybe one out of 10 trillion, trillion, trillion planets or whatever that would ever have life on it, if any, because the odds are so low. So, but I don't believe that's true, and I think that one of the things that will confirm what I'm saying is if and when we find life in other worlds, and we're getting closer to that, and once we do, and we see that it is ubiquitous, which means it's like everywhere, at least in planets that we are can sense something about. There's some kinds of planets, like huge, gaseous, giant planets, that life on those planets don't exist in the physical dimension, so we wouldn't be able to determine anything about them. But planets that are more earthy, more Earth-like, those planets are going to be dominated by life. And we're going to say, well, wait a second. If they went through any kind of history, and we'll eventually figure out the history from the rocks, et cetera, as we have on this world, and we'll say, well, they had all these quirky things going on, and they still have life on them. Now, if even if you change one little thing about Earth, life would have been extinguished billions of years ago. Am I kidding you? That's the truth. And this is not conjecture. This has been proven somewhat, or to a great extent, in scientific theory. Let's take the moon as an example. If Earth didn't have a moon approximately the size and distance, of course it's been changing over time, from Earth, life would have failed a long time ago, because our seasons would be extreme and the weather would be too severe, and at various junctions in the Earth, the temperature would have gone wildly too high or too low for too long, and there wouldn't be any life. You see, this is the point that's so interesting, is that you got to have some plan, or the whole thing starts falling apart, unless you want to believe, again, that Earth is the only place, and we're just one out of 10 zillion, and this is it. There's not going to be any other life, because the odds are just too far against it. Even with all of the billions and billions, hundreds and billions of galaxies, with hundreds of billions of stars and hundreds of billions more of planets around each other, all those numbers, it would still be very hard to imagine how many, very few, if any, planets with life on them because of the extreme technical difficulties that are thrown in the process. Those difficulties are necessary to promote the development of life, and it's part of the plan. Souls are involved in this. So the complexity of the whole system, souls are using the information they gain from the either elements or lower life forms that they inhabit to be able to decide when it's appropriate to make some changes. Some of the changes directly involve the inner parts of the Earth. Some of the changes actually are connected to even greater beings that don't have anything to do with the planet Earth directly, but affect our sun and affect the way the whole planetary system is working. It gets that big. So we're involved in a great, great symphony of life that is being affected by things far beyond Earth and nonetheless intimately involved with Earth at the same time. Okay, wow. Sounds poetic to me. I like that. Okay. So, we've got these souls now, the group souls, that have a very complex issue. They're not only working on their individual life, but they have to be concerned about how the Earth is going to be changed while their life is here, and how they need to themselves develop better understanding, because they're eventually going to become soul of higher and higher life forms. The souls keep growing, and they keep developing. And it's just incredible what they have as a life, because they are getting sense from zillions of parts of our world. If we talk about life forms, think about how many ants there might be, you know, of a particular species. That could have one soul. And that soul is taking in a tremendous amount of information, at least from a subspecies these days, because many souls are specialized way beyond just the species level. But nonetheless, there is a huge amount of information. Now, this information comes into the soul, and then the soul has to make some decisions. First thing it does, if it is a life form, is it informs that life form as best as that life form can be informed with some level of thought. Almost all the thought is preconceived, meaning that the soul thinks about it, comes to some conclusions, gets information from other souls of like nature and ones that it can communicate with and capable of doing so, and they make certain decisions that have what we call instinctual nature being conveyed to whatever life form is being about. The more complex the life form is, the more the instinct is obvious, because the more complex it is in nature. The simplest instincts, such as taking in and out of water, certain ions, and certain minerals, is very, very basic. And that might be to the very lowest life forms. But some of the instinctual thought, which is preconceived, again, it's made by the soul and given to the life form. The life form doesn't directly think it. It just gets the message and says, okay, I'll do that. And some of it is very, very complicated. And we think that maybe in the past, some people, human beings, thought that maybe these creatures were thinking of this themselves, but of course that's not true. Because we can see that from one ant to another, they pretty much do the same stuff. You know? And they follow the same kind of instinctual nature. And they're controlled a lot by chemistry as well. So some of the instincts even comes from the pre-life elements of chemistry in the lower types of animals and plants. This is true because they're so close still to the pre-life kingdom that the part of the preconceived thought comes in an interplay with mineral group souls working with life group souls together to actually work together. Let me give you an example of that. We talked about ants. Ants use certain pheromones and chemistry. They use certain chemicals that they communicate with each other about. Those chemicals actually are being created not just by themselves, but they were pre-created by the group souls sometimes that now inhabit some forms of ants, but the group souls beforehand that existed in the mineral kingdom. You see how that works? So if I'm a group soul and I want to eventually develop ants, I better make some interesting compounds that ants will be able to sense that they can communicate with. One compound will be something that tells ants that there's food up ahead. Another one will say there's an anteater up ahead. It wants to eat us. And then there's another one that tells us that there's an interesting place to find a place to live in next. And so these chemicals tell ants these things. And also, another chemical might just say, follow me. You know, this is the way to wherever. And so all of this is going on, but these chemicals have to be pre-made. Because once you're an ant, you can't wait to make them because you won't survive long enough without them. So they have to be made before they're ants. If you think about what I'm saying, it makes sense. It also has put some glitches in some parts of evolution. But I'll let you think about that because it's very, very interesting. Anyway, we're out of time for right now. I like ending it on one of those things to think about. I just want to mention, if you have a chance, listen in to 1170 AM if you're in the Boston or Providence, Rhode Island areas of the country. If you're not, WDISAM.com. Listen into that. On Sunday, I'm going to be talking about Spiritual Initiation Part 1, and it's from 4 to 5 Eastern Standard Time. And in addition to that, coming soon, on November 3rd, over in Glendale Borders, Mimi's going to be talking about Astral Glamours from 7 p.m. to 8:15 p.m. Come by if you're in the Phoenix metropolitan area. I hope tonight's show has been interesting, and we're going to continue with part two. I'm going to tell you more about the life of souls. Eventually, yes, we will get to human souls. That's quite a bit different than I know the group souls are. But I still think it's very interesting that we at least got to cover that to some extent. So, until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.